This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott. And if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. Damn it. The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? You don't like it when I call you breather? I'm sorry, man. I don't even know your name. Well, in my defense, it's not like you say much, just a bunch of heavy breathing. Listen, if you're triggered by being called breather, say no more. I'll stop. I wish you would have said something sooner. You've been calling for 2 years. What do you mean you want to stay anonymous so that your friends don't find out you listen to our shitty podcast? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Don't Call Me Dude by Scatterbrain? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Don't Call Me Dude by crossover funk metalers Scatterbrain. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news. This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter, Rico motherfucking Gnu, on the line. Rico, how the hell are you?
Dude. Listen, man, the sun rose today. It's going to rise tomorrow. My heart is still beating. It's a fucking win for me, dude. I'm winning. About you, how you feeling?
The sun. It's been the gloomiest stretch of days ever here in Neo.
Well, it's October. What do you expect? October is the best month for gray, slow, misty rains and 48 to 52 degrees for 4 weeks. It's just the way it works, right?
Yes.
Love man. It though. You ready for some good news?
I am ready for some good news. Why don't you lay it on me?
All right. So, Ghost, I know you've been into Ghost more than me. I've been trying to get into them more, but for some reason, just life gets in the way sometimes. But we're at an end of an era, Scott. Papa Emeritus IV is retiring from Ghost. I know that they've done this kind of thing before where, you know, I don't remember the names of the other ones, but the end of the tour and Papa Emeritus is no longer. I know this is maybe a sad day for the, what is the Ghost fans called? Ghostians?
I don't know if they have a nickname. I don't think they're like the Kiss Army. We could give them a name.
Well, let's call them I'm going to call them the Ghostians. it sounds dumb, but it's the first thing that came to mind. So do you think the Ghostians, how do you think the Ghostians are taking this? Is this an exciting thing for them because now they get to see a new iteration of the front man? Like Tobias is going to come up with somebody else. What's your, I know you're way more into them than me. So what's your thoughts on this?
Oh man, let me tell you, I am a Ghostian at heart. I've been following Ghost since their first record, and I'm a big fan. Yeah. And I've seen these many iterations of Papa Emeritus at the end of every tour cycle. They retire one and bring another one in. I remember the original one was like all scary, the scary satanic Pope. I remember the really strange one for the prequel tour, who looked like the janitor from One Day at a Time. He had like the mustache and the
Oh shit. What the hell was his name?
I don't remember.
The one that was like creeping on Valerie Bertinelli like every single episode.
Every single episode, God bless him. So I remember that Papa, although that wasn't a full Papa, he was a cardinal. But Cardinal Copia was his name.
Oh, all right.
But how do I feel about it, Rico? I'm sick of it. That's how I feel. I'm old and cranky and no longer enjoy anything in life. And so yet another Papa is just rinse, repeat, do it again, la-di fucking da.
Get off my lawn.
Well, okay, plus one for boomerism. Listen, man, I kind of think that this... it's a good thing, man. I kind of like this. It keeps the crowd fresh. It keeps pulling in, and not the crowd fresh, but it keeps their shtick fresh. I think it's a cool thing. You know, not very many bands, I can't think of any bands that are doing this kind of thing where they keep swapping out the front man like this. This is really creative. I kind of like the concept. I can totally see from your standpoint, you know, you're getting up there in years, and so this kind of thing is a little past your capabilities, I'm guessing, but it's okay. I'll work with it. I'm just kidding, by the way. No, I totally understand how one could think that this is stale. How many times do you think they can go to the well before the well runs dry? And it's like, man, okay, this character swap thing is getting kind of old, right? It is a cool concept, but do you know how many times they've done this?
Oh, they've done it after every album tour. This is like, what, their fifth album? Let me think real quick. One, two. Yeah, this is their fifth album. So they've done it like five times.
Okay, yeah. So, and they've been around since what? Or like what?
Like 2010, something like that.
Okay, so in 13 years, they've done this five times. Okay, yeah, so it's maybe reaching its expiration date. It's maybe reaching the finish line. Maybe Tobias Forge is hopefully... will realize that he can't do this every single time, although it is kind of a cool idea. I don't know, dude. I think it's a good way to keep things fresh. I don't know. So Yngwie Malmsteen, there's an article about Yngwie, who basically has come out and said, I am in a point in my artistic life where I don't need help producing. I don't need help writing. I don't need help with anything. I am perfectly contented. I mean, and there's big quotes in here about like, I can start a painting, but I'm not going to ask you to finish it for me. That doesn't make any sense. He's like, I have completed songs in my head when I wake up in the morning. So I really don't need help with any of that stuff. I am perfectly contented to do it myself. You can call it egotistic if you want. I don't see it that way.
Oh, good for you.
Why is this even news, Scott? Because it's him?
I don't know, man. I don't know why Yngwie would be in the news unless he's got something to promote. I saw he's going to be on Rick Beato, too. So maybe he's promoting something. I don't know. But interesting way to promote things and get your name out there by simply saying, yeah, fuck y'all.
Well, that's kind of the way it is. I suppose the way you get noteworthy is by stirring the pot, right? So maybe this is just a good marketing strategy for him to stir the pot. And guess what? It's working because we're talking about him.
Could you imagine? I gotta believe that Yngwie Malmsteen is a difficult dude to work with, you know?
Oh, like he's gotta be.
Don't you get the sense the guy's a little
little high on himself, man. He's a little bit of, he's a little narcissistic. He's kind of got that ego thing happening, right?
Well, here's the reality. Like back when, maybe I'm completely wrong about this because I didn't really follow him in the 80s at all. And I mean, he's a superb neoclassic rock guitar player, right? Isn't that how you would classify him?
Sure thing.
Okay. So back in the 80s, I think it was, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Randy Rhoads was really like the first dude that was really injecting some classical stuff into his guitar playing. Is that right? Would I be wrong in saying that?
I would say Ritchie Blackmore was doing it in early Deep Purple, kind of like he was like the first. I think in my mind, he's one of the first notable guys. But I mean, Randy took it to a different place. So, yeah, you could credit Randy with it.
OK, so in the 80s, I would say when Yngwie first got on the scene, it was a really big deal what he was doing. Like he was noodling up and down a guitar neck like fucking nobody could do what he was doing, especially because he was kind of meshing classical with hard rock, with heavy metal, right? And it was something, like you said, Blackmore and Randy Rhoads were kind of doing it, but he really took it to a new level. The reason why it's not a huge deal anymore, dude, because I'm seeing fucking 12-year-olds on YouTube doing what he can do. They're playing just as good as a teenager as he's playing right now. The difference is he's creating his own stuff, okay? But let's face it, dude, that's not even a big deal anymore. Artists doing their own thing. That Eddie Van Halen, that's why he was so difficult to work with, because he wanted to do everything, and that's why ultimately he did everything in his own studio. Dark Side of the Moon, we talked about that. The guys had their fingers all over the production of that, and the same with the Beatles going all the way back to Sgt. Pepper's. They were all over the production of that album. And to take it one step further, Brian Wilson, when he made Pet Sounds, also was all over everything. He was the sole guy. He had his fingers all over the engineering, he had his fingers all over the production, and he wrote everything. So the fact that this is even in the news is baffling to me, because this is not a new thing. This has been going on for almost 60 years now, right?
I think what's interesting to me, and I think about this a lot, it's that generally, as I get older, the thing I realize, and I guess this podcast is kind of about that too, but
yeah,
as I get older, the more I realize that everything I love and everything that meant something to me ends and dies and doesn't mean anything anymore. And so when you say that, like, it doesn't mean anything because I see 12-year-olds on YouTube doing this stuff, this guitar stuff, I'm like, yeah, that's true. It has no value. There's no, like, being a shreddy, amazing guitar player is about as useful as being a milkman these days. There's no value to it whatsoever. It is a trade that you might as well be like a blacksmith or the milkman or some other archaic, useless trade that used to be viable, that used to be a living. No one cares. No one's impressed. No one's interested. It's over. Okay.
Do you think people are going to give a shit about Yngwie Malmsteen and what he has to say when, like, Tim fucking Henson is doing exactly what he does, except maybe even a little bit better because of the amount of, he puts a little more emotion into his playing. So I agree with you totally. It's a commodity now. It's an oversupplied commodity. It doesn't hold value anymore.
Well, Yngwie has his fan base that he built up, and that's still a thing. So he has that. But I mean, just generally, everything, as I get older, I realize everything I cared about and held dear and valued dies. It all does. The music I love, dying. I've spent my life trying to learn the guitar. No one cares. No one's impressed. Believe me, if you pick a guitar up in front of people or at a party, people just want you to leave the fucking room.
It used to be cool, but now it's like, oh,
no one cares. All the movies I loved as a kid growing up are either have lame special effects, are outdated, or are so out of touch with the times that they would be canceled and buried and shot off the Mars. You know what I mean? So, like, literally everything that foundationally I've built myself as a human being on, none of it fucking matters.
You mean to tell me that watching a crappy B movie where they're playing catch with a severed penis isn't cool to watch?
Okay, well, that would be Street Trash that you're referencing, and it's a great movie, but the broader point I'm making is that as I get older, the more, like, Rico, think about the music we talk about on this podcast.
I know.
50 fucking years old. We talked about Chuck Berry and Little Richard, for Christ's sake. The music is so old. I mean, we are going so far back in the past just to try. I mean, just because, why? Because it's stuff I care about. So it's like, but no one else cares. That's the most irrelevant, old ass, boring shit. They say, hey, when you start a podcast, have a niche. Don't be too broad. Have a niche. That's the key to get an audience. Well, apparently, who knew? Rock and roll is so niche-y and so the audience is so small that we might as well be doing a podcast on square dancing, because no one's fucking interested, right?
Oh, dude. Well, it's a 50-year-old niche. It's like our podcast niche is about the size of a postage stamp. So it's amazing anybody listens to the show.
It's amazing. So there's nothing, when I see Yngwie and I think of myself chasing guitar superstardom in my bedroom, I think nothing more useless, you know? And you just live long enough to see everything that you do and care about devalued, not cared about by subsequent generations, and rendered irrelevant. In a handful of years, I'll be replaced by AI, and then it'll be over. It'll all be over. I'll have nothing left, Rico. What else is in the news?
Pretty soon, AI will be doing the show. Would you more so than me, are a kind of a collector, right? You collect things. Like, I know you've got some horror stuff. You've got some...
Not anymore. I've sold most of it. I'm preparing to die. I mean, this goes right with the theme of getting rid of stuff. Before the pandemic, I began the process of purging everything I own.
You made your will. You got everything set up.
I'm dead serious, man. I am hyper aware of where I'm at in life. The average Caucasian male lives to be about 74 in this country. Rico, it's time to start getting rid of some shit. I got less than a quarter of a century left, buddy. Okay. True. I ain't going to leave it for my kids to fucking have to dig through all my crap and be burdened with giving it away. So I went on eBay and started hawking all of my collectibles. I don't collect anything. I don't want anything. I don't want to collect anything. Don't gift me anything. Don't want it. I'm getting rid of it, baby.
Was there any point in your life? I'm guessing yes. That's my prediction here. Is there any point in life where you would buy a $500 CD?
No.
No.
No, never. Well, I've never in my life had so much disposable income that I could drop $500 on. If I had to make a purchase like that, if I bought like a guitar or something, I would have to save for it and then probably pay it off in like a payment plan. So a $500 CD was no way that was going to happen.
Well, you know, local guy Maynard from Tool, you know, from Ravenna here in Portage County. Does he recognize that he's from Portage County? Have you ever heard him mention it?
I did. I heard him mention it at Lollapalooza when Devo and Tool co-headlined Lollapalooza with Snoop Dogg was on that bill and Korn. I was there. They stopped in Cuyahoga Falls at Blossom Music Center. And Maynard looked out in the crowd when Tool took the stage somewhere in their set, introducing himself and the band and mentioned Ravenna, Ohio by name.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yep. Well, in honor of the 30th anniversary of their debut album, Undertow, they're issuing a special signed copy. There's only going to be 7,000 of them. There's going to be some other little goodies in there, but they're selling this CD for $500. Okay, Kiss probably could get away with something like that under certain circumstances. Maybe, you know, they're the Rolling Stones really could get away with something like that. Is Tool a band that can get away with Tool? Could they get away with something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think they have a pretty hardcore fan base. Yeah, I think they do.
Interesting.
And I think there's collectors out there who will buy that shit.
All right. I mean, a $500 CD of a debut album. I didn't know, like, okay, Tool is... I always saw Tool as... Okay, obviously we know that they're ridiculously talented, but as far as the popular meter goes, I have always felt like they've always been a kind of a popular band, but just shy of that ridiculous area that could definitely get away with the $500 CD. I feel like as far as popularity is concerned, in my opinion, they did just kind of fall a little bit short of that. Am I wrong with that?
No, I think you're right. They're not touching the sun in terms of album sales and popularity, but what they have is they have one of those fan bases that's super rabid and super devoted. It's actually like the perfect level of success because they're not so successful that it like changes them as human beings, or they just become like so rich that they become complacent and their art suffers. They're in that perfect sweet spot to where they can still make good art that matters. And they have like a fan base they're going to sell X number of units and X number of tickets every time because they have like that hardcore fan base. You know what I mean? Like a Clutch or something like that. One of those bands, you know, although Clutch is nowhere near as big as Tool, but Tool's just under. They're like, you know, if they're not A-list, they're like maybe between like C and B, maybe a low B, high C, but their fan base is crazy, man.
Okay, so if they're a like a C band, B minus, B, is that enough? I mean, is this CD, it's anything is worth what you pay for it, and ultimately they'll probably sell all 7,000 of these. But if you were a collector, if you had a little storefront, right, where you bought and sold collectibles, you did it collectibles, is this a $500 CD? Is Tool's debut with some autographs on it, is that really a $500 CD?
I can't imagine that. Well, even if you had an original copy autographed back in the 90s or something, I can't imagine that it's worth $500. But I don't know. There's got to be something special about it. Some kind of packaging or something, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some packaging. It's got some artwork on it. It's got the autograph. Now, I could say that if you had, you know, an original CD, maybe with the plastic still on it, and those had autographs on it, okay, I could see how that would maybe be worth $500, but I don't know, dude. I really like Tool as a band. I think they're ridiculously talented, but I think they're overreaching with the $500 CD thing. I personally do. I don't know, maybe you don't feel that way, but I do.
Can I tell you a quick story? So when I was purging all of my shit, which I've gotten rid of 99% of it now, my biggest sale, was it my biggest sale? My biggest music sale of collectible stuff I have is I sold a Danzig record, a Danzig picture disc of their album Circle of Snakes for over $300 to some guy in Las Vegas.
Are you kidding?
I'll tell you the reason why. For a single album, for one thing, there's a couple weird things about this. For one thing, it was a legitimate short run copy. I was able to photograph an image of the number on the record, and I was able to find the information on Discogs, and they only produced, he only made like 700 of them. When you're an independent artist, like he has always been, with the exception of that brief window of time he was on Deaf American, he's always making this stuff himself. And so, you know, you would only do so many prints of records, right? And CDs and stuff. So things would go out of print all the time until he would find another distributor. So for this specific Laserdisc, there literally only existed 700 of them.
Wow.
So here's what's weird. I do not remember buying it.
Really?
And I people think I'm lying when I say this all the time, but I have no reason to lie about this. I am like a cross between the guy in Memento who has to get everything tattooed on him to remember things and Adam Sandler from 51st Dates. I have the worst memory. I tell my mom that all the time and she's like, oh, you're fine. And I'm like, no, there's something wrong with me. I don't remember shit. And my wife will tell you, I fucking forget everything, important shit. And I don't remember doing things. I've loaned people money and I forget about it. I'm like, did I loan you a couple $100? I don't know. If enough time passes, I forget. And like, I forget. So I have no memory and it's killed me because I have tried. I just knew I had it, you know, and I don't remember buying it. I don't remember when I got it, how I got it. I don't fucking remember. And I would have that association with like a lot of my shit. If I bought it long enough, if I bought it in the 90s, I don't fucking remember. I was drunk a lot in the 90s. I don't know when I bought the damn thing. You know what I mean? And I had no memory of buying it. I just knew I had it and I knew it was limited. And when I Googled it and looked it up, what they were going for, I was like, holy shit, you know, and it burned my ass because I had no memory of buying it at all. You know,
that's crazy. Hey, can I borrow a couple $100? hey, what before we take a break, what was the most painful thing that you got rid of? Like it was the hardest to give up.
Nothing.
Really?
None of it.
Like ready you didn't have one thing that you're like, damn, it means I really not. That's,
I would look at it and think it doesn't mean anything to me. And so at nothing, there was nothing I miss or want back or felt bad about. Nothing. It served whatever goofy purpose it served in my life of basically being in a box cohabitating with me and never getting looked at. None of this shit just was in boxes. I don't miss it. I don't miss it. I mean, there isn't anything. Nothing.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't expecting that, but that's okay. It's a good answer. Hey, listen, dude, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some cool dudes, dude. So stay tuned, dudes and dudettes.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out, either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host the Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, on this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage. And with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities. And with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, Rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May Rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, ladies and germs, welcome back tonight. Oh, by the way, hey, thanks for sticking around. If you like what you hear, just handcuff a bunch of people to yourself and force them to listen. It'll be just fine. They'll like it. But thanks anyways. Thanks for sticking around and listening. We're going to be talking, Scott, about Scatterbrain. We're going to be talking about off the Here Comes Trouble album, Don't Call Me Dude. This came out in 1990. Gosh, the genre of the band. I mean, they're kind of, we'll get into that. They kind of dip their toes in a lot of different things. This song is about 5 minutes and 14 seconds, written by the guys. Don't call me dude, please.
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet.
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet.
Is this song do? We'll find out. Did it kill rock? I don't know, Scott. Let's talk about it.
I love it. You found a way to work in a lame poo joke.
I know. I'm sorry.
We don't do enough poop humor on this podcast. Maybe we should start doing a little more, working a little more brown, if you will.
Well, and here's why you're right, because I don't care if you're 8 or if you're 80, poop and farts are funny and they always will be. Fact. So I totally agree with you.
So this is Rock and Roll Autopsy. I'm just going to blow right over it.
Thanks for keeping things going, by the way.
Well, we could just crash the car into, I guess we could rant about pooping, I guess, if you want to, but,
I'm always up for some poop discussion.
Well, you said you had a good poop today, right? Took a good dump today, didn't you say that?
Yeah, man, like it was soul cleansing. It was nice. I felt like when you get that hollow feeling inside, like, you know, it's a good one when you're it's like, it was good, dude. Trust me, it's hard to when's the last time you had one of those,
like a soul really
cleansing, like a soul cleansing shit,
soul, you know, like a religious dump, a soul cleansing. Yeah. Found God.
Like it made you, you're by yourself and you still smile, and you still smiled because it was that good.
I don't know, man. You know, I haven't had a dump that's made me think like, wow, man, I feel like a lot of relief and I'm really happy things went the way they did there. A lot of times they're just usually followed by some level of disappointment. Like, oh, I was hoping for a religious experience, but ultimately all I got was a bowl full of turds. And so,
and the impending hemorrhoid that always winds up following it. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, things get harder. I feel like things, the ass gets harder to wipe as years go on. And, you know, it's like, I'm using more toilet paper than ever before. You know, it's a lot of, there's roids going on down there, hair. It's a minefield, man. It's a lot of,
do you know what the difference is?
The terrain is rocky. You know,
listen, man, listen, you gotta,
people are turning this off.
Fiber dude it makes all the difference in the world. You will poop like a champion. Just gotta start slamming some fiber.
You think you're like breaking some news to me. I used to buy Metamucil and I would drink it just for the poop. I mean, just
I don't think Metamucil is all it's cracked up to be, dude.
It worked. Really? Yeah, of course it did. It's just fucking fiber supplement, dude. It would just
did it make you gassy like advertised?
No, I would just shit like a champ, you know.
Okay, so then what's the problem then? Why don't you just get more of that?
We got to make choices, man. I have all women living in house with me. Just the bill from the hair salon alone every month, dude. I mean, you have any fucking idea?
I sure do. I lived with all women, and when you live with all women, your colon health means nothing. all that matters is their health and beauty supplies. So,
all right. It's Rock and Roll Autopsy. Way off topic. The band is Scatterbrain. The song is Don't Call Me Dude. The question is, did this strange kind of anomaly of a flash in time song from the early 90s that came and went like a fart in the wind. Did it kill rock and roll? You know, we are turning over every rock. We're looking under every crevice. What's the Tommy Lee Jones speech from The Fugitive?
What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
We're looking everywhere, dude, to find out what killed rock and roll. So maybe it was this brief moment in 1990-91 when Scatterbrain was a weird band that was on the horizon for just a flash in time and then disappeared. Maybe they did it. I don't know. We gotta look and find out, right?
It would be a silly notion to assume that only the big popular songs killed rock. That's not necessarily the case, dude.
It could be this anomaly of a cross-dressing crossover thrash band from 1990 that did it. We don't know. We've got to find out. So how do we do it to finally get to the point 10 minutes into this fucking show? How do we do it? We've got proprietary science, battle-tested over almost 2 years and 100 episodes of hardcore science. Rico, should children try this at home? I say no, but who knows?
Well, what'll wind up happening is kind of like you and your colon issues. If anybody tries to do this, you're just going to wind up very disappointed and probably blowing your ass out. So just let us do all the dirty work for you. Don't blow your ass out. Don't give yourself hemorrhoids trying to do what you can't do. Let us take care of it for you. Thank you for listening to our show, by the way. Go for it, Scott. Just let us do it.
Yes, no prolapse of the bowel necessary.
No, you don't want that.
To avoid it, we've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. The band is Scatterbrain. The song, Don't Call Me Dude. The category, gratuitous boomerism. Rico, how do you score?
You know, when I think of gratuitous boomerism, like, I'm thinking, you know, like, there's nothing get off my lawnish about these guys. There's nothing super dated about the message or about how it's delivered. These guys are just like crazy ass. I can only assume like there's really very little info on this band. So it's hard to know if they're actually boomers, or I think they're probably Xers just by the way they conduct their business, so to speak. They're getting a flat zero for me in boomerism. Scott, what about you?
Yeah, man. I mean, I have the only one guy in the band, Glenn Cummings, even has a Wikipedia page, and it's got no mention of his birthday, only his active years as a musician. So I don't know whether they're like, you know, late boomers or early Xers, or I don't know where they're at in this whole thing. I do know that the band feels kind of Generation X. So, and they're in that window of time, just as the 80s is rolling over into the 90s and grunge hadn't quite hit, but they're in that magic year of 1991 when, you know, Black Album, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nirvana, Nevermind. We know all the big albums from that year,
for
right?
Sure.
It was a huge year for rock and roll. So they're right there riding that wave, getting some MTV airplay. But I don't see any gratuitous boomerism here. So I'm going to go ahead and give them a zero.
Yep.
Let's move on. Category two, excessive misogyny. And Rico, I have the lyrics to Don't Call Me Dude available if you need to hear them.
Yeah, please lay it on me, man.
And by the way, I'm on songmeetings.com, where the band is so obscure and flash in the pan that not a single person has commented on these lyrics. Here's my story, sad but true, about a girl that I once knew. She broke my heart. I became unglued. It all started when she called me dude. Well, today I leave the psycho ward because my sentence did conclude. I'd killed a man with my bare hands because he called me dude. The jury said I was insane, temporarily insane, brain strain. But now the doctors say I'm A-OK. So I start my new life today. This story starts some years ago as I vacationed by the sea in the California sunshine, just me and my baby. I was in love, feeling sky high with the big blonde lifeguard walking by. He looked at her. She looked at him. I knew it was goodbye. He took her by the hand, kicked sand in my face. She looked and laughed and said, "Later, dude." They were gone without a trace, and the waves echoed her laughter and her words. Yo, later, dude.
The opening few lines are from a song called Run Around Seuss. A song at all?
Yep.
Okay, so here's my story, sad but true, about a girl that I once knew. She took my love and ran it around with every single guy in town. That's where that song came from. That's a 50s tune. The other weird, crazy part about this band is this whole song is like a redux on an old vaudeville bit that the Three Stooges made popular. Remember that old Niagara Falls thing?
Yeah, man. You
know, that slowly I turned, step by, where he's recalling the same type of a story about a girl and how she was stolen by somebody else. And he was telling another person the story. So the weird part about this band is like the time in which they came out, and they seem to be kind of our age, but the stuff that they're referencing is like super fucking old, dude.
Well, there's your gratuitous boomerism.
But it's, maybe I ought to revise my score, but at any rate, this song is kind of like a reverse misogyny, because the dude gets done by the girl and not the other way around. Like, she totally is goes away with this other guy and kind of leaves him hanging. So in light of the dude being done instead of the girl, clearly this is going to be a zero for misogyny. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a zero as well. I don't see any misogyny in here. It's funny because the song, to your point, it's like goes from 50s doo-wop to the next verse is like the devil went down to Georgia. It's like got the same delivery and everything. Yeah, and then it goes into the Three Stooges bit. Then it just turns into a thrash song. Yeah. And then it ends kind of back in the 50s again. But yeah, it's a zero for me. Let's move on to category three. Don't call me dude. Wanton whiteness. Rico, how do you score?
Wow, man. Really, there's nothing there. The doo-wop-y thing is not necessarily white. You know, the thrash kind of is, but any reference to vaudeville period is going to be a white thing. There's nothing not white about vaudeville. If any of you youngins don't know what vaudeville is, you're not missing anything. It was like 85 years ago. I will say that okay, so vaudeville is super white. Doo-wop isn't necessarily white, however, and we'll get to this in vulturism, but the fact that they're borrowing references from so many different places is a really white thing to do. I personally, but they have a super night. They play funk super good, dude. I gotta go 0.5 on for whiteness, because there is some whiteness here, but it's not full on cracker white. So I'm gonna only do I'm struggling with the 0.5 on this one, but I'm going to do the obligatory 0.5 because they're white. So how's that sound?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to go ahead and give them a one. I think I think they rode a white ass wave of white ass rock music in the early 90s. the subject matter, you know, a guy gets triggered by the word dude. I mean, am I wrong in saying that, you know, white guys are the ones that are always throwing the dude around? I am infamous for using the word dude. I got called out on it years ago. Someone I worked with at a factory once asked me if I was from California because I used the word dude so much.
Really?
So, yes. And so, and I'm as white as they come. So if I'm using it and I'm using it gratuitously, it's got to be just as cracker ass shit as you can possibly imagine.
That's a good point. You know, I catch myself saying dude a lot too, and I don't like it sometimes, but it's become such a habit that I say I don't even think about it anymore. But
yeah,
we got to think about cutting down on that a little bit.
I try to, man, but yeah, dude. And then years ago I had an addiction to the word dang, so I'd be like, dang.
Oh, I remember that.
Dang,
I remember, you know, that.
So, yeah, so, and dude, a lot of dudes. I've been saying dude, totally, dude. You know, Ashton Kutcher. But
what about your easy phase? Like, I remember that you had your phase where you were like, easy.
I think not doing
that so more either.
No, well, there's nothing to, dude, these are trying times. Can't be taking it easy now. yeah, so I'm going to score him a one for this. So let's move on. Malignant machismo. Don't call me dude. How do you score Rico?
Well, he does like kill a dude for saying what's up, dude. So that's kind of malignant in a machismo way, but it's because he got done by a girl, and that's not super machismo at all. I think if you talk about his delivery, his kind of like Dave Mustaine-ish delivery in a lot of his songs.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of machismo here. I'm going to go halfway and give it a 0.5 for machismo.
Yeah, he gets hurt by a woman and yeah. It like wrecks him to the point of violence. He gets drunk because of it, you know.
Yeah.
Later that night, I'm in such a bad mood, sitting in a bar, drinking hard, getting stewed, thinking about that girl and about how I've been screwed, right? And then some dude walks in, you hear the rhyme coming, says what's up dude, and he strangles the guy. So he's this guy is clearly, you know, the not everything is wired right any longer after this dude trauma, and he's triggered by the word. So and he flies into a rage whenever he hears it. Super violent. The music gets violent. You know, that's when you get into the thrashy portion of the song when it really fucking rocks out, you know? And it's don't call me dude. And so I have to score this a one, because if I, especially me being someone who is, listen, I'm barely a man. I could get beat up by 95% of the men on this planet. So, and I say dude all the time. So I'm in jeopardy being around people like this who fly off the handle at the mere mention of the one syllable D word. I just for my own, you know, self-preservation, I've got to call this guy out for his, toxic masculinity.
Dude. You're just doing it to protect yourself, and I can't blame you on that.
So I'm giving him a full one for
that's
that.
A good call, dude. It's a good call.
Our final category, culture vulturism. Rico, scatterbrain, don't call me dude. How do you score?
See, now here clearly is the category that I've been looking forward to talking about the most. These guys, wow, dude, they're all, see, just said it. These guys are, first of all, can I say that these guys are ridiculously talented. First of all, they get a plus 500 for culture vulturism because I've never heard a band rip off more shit than this band does. Like they, and I think that's their problem, dude.
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet.
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet.
Like they come in at it. I know. See, it's a habit now. See, you're going to make me think about it. So I think the problem with this band, Scott, is they came out at a bad time. They came out when serious self-loathing Seattle style grunge was really apexing and at its peak. Right. And this band, if this band would have came out in like 93 or 94, when that super creative post-grunge phase, like when the Presidents and shit were super popular, I think this band would have been more popular. But because it came out a little bit too early in a way too serious phase of rock, that they weren't as popular as they were. But Culture Vulturism, dude, holy hell. I have never heard so many different styles of music on this album in my life. And they all do it. They do every one of those styles amazing. They can do prog, they can do classical, they can do country, they can do blues, they can do thrash. There is nothing these guys can't play, and they do a really great job. I think and I think because of that, they don't settle in on one particular style of music. And I think that's the problem. That's why it didn't become as popular, because no group of people can latch onto them because they're all over the fucking place, Scott. So for that reason, they are getting a clear 1.0 for me for Vulturism.
Yeah, it's weird though, because is it Vulturism in the sense that they're, you know, appropriating other people's music, or is it like kind of intentionally cutting ideas from other people and pasting them into your own as like almost like a skit? You know what I mean? It's like I said, the song starts in the 50s, goes into The Devil Went Down to Georgia, goes into a thrash song, and then ends as like a doo-wop song. And then at the very end, when he says, "You can call me Ray or you can call me Jay," it's fucking a boy named Sue, you know, where yeah. Call him Billy, Bob, George, whatever. Just don't call me Sue. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
Like they're cleverly kind of referencing all these things that we're familiar with, but yeah. they bring enough of their own thing to the table to where the way they present it, it doesn't sound like recycled stuff, you know? So I mean, it's weird because they're clearly just like stitching together like three or four pre-existing songs, but they're doing it and they're making their own thing out of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. When getting ready for this episode was like the first time I had listened to this album. Don't get me wrong. In the reasoning for my score, I love this album. I'll probably go back to it actually, because I love how all over the place it is. I love all the references. I love listening to their songs and trying to figure out what song they pulled that lick out of. Dude, they play fucking Earache in My Eye on this album. That alone gets my attention right there. So even though I give them a one for Vulturism, I really love this album. And so I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, oh, you're good, man. Yeah, the one that's probably the most cut and paste song on this is the one Down with the Ship, Slight Return, where they work in like guitar riffs from every like famous guitar song ever. It's just so cool the way they do it. But
I know.
So I will score them. I'm going to give them a 0.5 for Culture Vulturism here.
That's fair enough.
All right, Rico, dude, let's wrap this up. What do I have? I have 2.5. What do you have, sir?
I've got 2.0.
For a grand total of
4.5.
Okay. There you go. Science works.
It's on the good side.
It's a flash in the pan.
It's precisely where it ought to be. It didn't contribute to rock, but it's on that side. So it had merit. There were some good things about it, but it was far, far from killing rock and roll. So again, the science works.
We had to check it out. And I always have gotten a kick out of this song. I'm a user of the word dude, and I'm an abuser of the word dude. Never cared. Maybe this is my white privilege showing, but I've never given a shit what people call me. So it's like the idea of being called dude. Years ago, remember, I worked at Giant Eagle, a grocery store here locally, years ago. And there was a guy there. I worked nights stocking shelves. And there was a guy there who was like the manager who was in the morning. He called me Todd for probably like 2 years. And I never corrected him. I'd never bothered. And then one morning he comes up to me just like aghast and like slack jawed. And he's like, why didn't you tell me? You know, because somehow somebody tipped him off. And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't care.
Was this Graham Road or this was in
Stowe. And I was like, I don't care. And it's like, see, I'm never going to care what people call me if I don't care about other people.
That good fences make good neighbors. A friend of mine once said that. And so,
I mean, if I don't put a tremendous amount of value in what you think, then why would I care what you say? So
precisely. Don't get attached. Don't get attached. And then when people call you things, you're not going to care because you're not invested enough. Right.
So this guy, our main character here, he's way out of line for getting so upset about being called dude. He totally is.
Like he is that bent over this chick going off with this lifeguard that he's way too invested in that shit, man. Like if she is willing to just get up and leave him that easily, he should have. Yeah, that's his bad for getting that invested into that relationship, dude.
Listen, dude, there's other fish in the sea.
There totally is. Totally. Is that another bad? Is that up there with dude? Totally. I say totally a lot.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've got a lot. Man is one I say a lot. I've got a lot of like verbal tics that should probably be eliminated from my vocabulary. But at this point, I don't care.
It doesn't matter, right? I mean, I think I like have the verbiage of probably a 12-year-old at this point in time. You're right, though. I'm not really sure if I give a damn or not.
I don't know. Here's the thing: is I've never. I think it's always a good policy just to keep your fucking mouth shut. And outside of this podcast, pretty much do that. And when I don't is when I get called down to the boss's office and get my ass handed to me. So it's always like never a bad policy just to shut the fuck up. And there isn't enough of it in the world today. Everybody's got to spout off on X and everywhere else. Right.
Well, so that's right.
Keep your thoughts to yourself.
Well, you know, and that's why we have two ears and one mouth, because we should be listening twice as much as we talk.
This is like some old dad shit.
Right. And you don't want to open your mouth and get called to the carpet. And what's worse than getting called to the carpet, Scott, is making the walk of shame, dude. The walk of shame is awful. So you're just better to just be silent, fly under the radar, be better off for it.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about people getting mad and step by stepping. All right, gang, this has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for making it through to the end of this. You're all better people now for it.
Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mystique anymore.
Oh, I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica. And Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts or visit battleofthebandspod.com.